The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to What About Wealth?
Good morning, good morning. Arizona, where last week we had snow down in the desert.
Wow, and today I've got snow in Utah, so imagine
that. It's sunny here, yeah. It's sunny here in the 80s, probably.
Wow, you guys recovered more quickly.
Yeah, it went away. Actually, my phone tells me it's only going to be in the 70s today, so we'll have to suffer through that.
Sounds like good weather compared to especially a lot of the country today has got a lot of problems, people trying to get to work.
I'm envious of the snow, though. I want to come up to your neck of the woods and go snowboarding. I need to do that.
Yeah, come on up.
Well, we have
gone before long.
Yeah, never lasts. We've got a fun show today. We're going to talk about what we wish people knew about planning. It's kind of astonishing to me how many people have simply done nothing at all. Even highly successful people that have managed to accumulate great fortunes have often simply ignored, delayed, put off, done nothing at all. And we're going to cover some of those very basic things today, which hopefully will be useful. But we want to start with, of course, a couple of key news items that affect our finances, our wealth. And one of the big things is all these tax increases that have come in, particularly the payroll taxes, and then we see rising fuel prices, gas well over $4 a gallon in some places. It certainly diesel is in our location. And then, of course, declining employment, those three big items are hitting the low-income group the hardest and are hitting retailers pretty hard. They have decreased their sales projections just based on the decline of disposable income from the three biggies, rising payroll taxes, rising fuel prices, and declining employment.
Yeah, and gold, interestingly, has recently rebounded with the uncertainty over the sequester and some inconclusive elections in Italy, which has kind of thrown them into a bit of a tizzy over there, but many large hedge funds have gotten out of gold and are staying out because they don't see the long-term benefits of that. So I don't know if that tells our listeners a lot, but I guess for a long time here, people have been accumulating it. Now there's some that are saying they're at the top and they're not going to play that game anymore.
Well, people who are behind the curve will buy now that the price is up.
Yeah,
we sadly see that, oh, the price is going up, it must be a good deal, and they rush out to buy more. You know, speaking of gold, that Nevada recluse that died with millions of dollars of gold stashed in his closet because he didn't trust the government and didn't trust banks and was hiding out. Apparently, all that gold is resulting in a big whopping estate tax and – we should not be surprised. The taxing authorities are alleging that he was able to accumulate this gold by unlawfully not paying some of his taxes. So over half the gold is going to be confiscated by the government, and they're going to call it a tax. So the poor guy who could have cleverly avoided all of his taxes and passed that fortune on to his heirs completely tax-free. His wealth fell victim to the very, very powers that he was most afraid of.
Should have talked to us, Rick. That's what I say.
He should have come in to see us.
Pathetic. But, you know, he didn't. Sounds like they had a difficult time finding any heirs anyway. So, but.
Yeah, they were remote, but still.
Still, it would have been better than getting it sequestered.
You can always leave your money to the government where you live. The taxing authorities are happy to be heirs of your estate. And if you do no planning, they will certainly be heirs to a significant portion of it.
That's true. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, Rick, is this sequester is, and I think the nice thing is, you know, Bob Woodward yesterday called out Obama on trying to lay the blame on Congress. Probably all of our listeners remember Woodward. He's the guy that uncovered the Watergate thing back in Nixon's day. So he's a guy that, but he's typically left of center, to say the least. And so for him to call out Obama on this is good news for sane people, thinking people that are wondering why he's the one that proposed it, signed it into law, and is now saying it's just a terrible thing. So it's really, you know, it's manufactured, Rick, and Obama's going around telling people, fear-mongering and telling people how awful it's going to be. I mean, we're only talking about 2.3%, $85 billion out of a $3.6 trillion budget.
Yeah, it only reduces the increase. It does not actually reduce the budget. It's politician speech. When they say a reduction, they're not. It's the amount of spending is not going down.
It's
the
going
amount
up.
Of increase is going down. The spending is still going up.
So you want. So you wonder why does this affect everything? That how could it possibly affect all those things? I mean, if you had 2.3% less in your family budget, Rick, I mean, would the sky be falling? I really doubt it.
The schools will open, our cars will work, the TV will still turn on, our kids are going to have fun. You can still read a book. The air, we can breathe the air and eat breakfast, and life is going to go on. And curiously, I saw the Congress, of course, excluded themselves and the politicians from the cuts. So their personal paychecks are not going to be affected by this.
Well, and the interesting thing is, and I think what this was intended to do in the first place was to try to force some collaboration on the entitlements reform and tax reform. Because really the entitlements are the things that are just growing and growing and growing. So that's, you know, it causes there to be less to go around everywhere else. And that's where they really need to focus. And, you know, it's going to happen, but I'm just afraid that, you know, before the end of March or something, they'll cut some other, wimpy deal instead of really addressing the real problem.
The politicians crave power and fear criticism, and as a consequence, lack the courage to take bold action. They're not going to do it. It's interesting. Clear back in mid-January, the Government Accounting Office, which is the auditor of the U.S. government, they look at everything and analyze it. They released its assessment of government spending, and they simply said the projections of this report indicate that the current policy is not sustainable. And then they go on to demonstrate why, that we just cannot continue to spend what we've been spending. We if we do not cut spending, it will collapse. And which brings me to an awesome quote by a politician of some considerable significance, so a world-renowned politician. He said, the budget should be balanced, the treasury should be refilled, public debt should be reduced and the assistance to foreign lands should be curtailed, lest our country become bankrupt. People must again learn to work instead of living on public assistance. And this was said by Cicero in the year 55 BC. Now, what happened to his country?
Yeah, Rome.
Yeah, is it a political power anymore? Interesting. And, you know, bread and circuses became the policy of the elite in their government as it was in its final stages of decline. Entertain the people with circuses and give them free bread, and they won't riot and storm the offices of government. And they were just having a good time while the Vandals were assembling on their borders to come in and sack Rome and burn it to the ground. And makes you wonder what lies in ahead for our nation as the politicians just won't make the tough decisions.
Well, it's interesting how we should learn from history, and but often we don't. And this is one that's just so obvious, and yet we, as you say, we don't have courageous people. So,
well, you know, the other thing is, these politicians can't be stupid. They don't get to where they are by being idiots. They have to be smart. And so to some extent, we have to conclude that this is not merely a lack of courage, that at least some of them, not all of them, no doubt, but at least some of them must be doing this on purpose. This must be what they want. And it, ironically or interestingly enough, the propaganda of the far left, the communist socialist propaganda dating back 50, 100 years, outlined what they were going to do. And curiously, this is it. This is what they said they were going to do. This is what they're doing. And now, of course, they disavow. Oh, nobody wants that. Nobody wants the government to collapse. And yet that's what they said they wanted. And this is how they said they were going to do it. And this is the result we're getting. So some of them must want it. That's all there is to
it. Well, it's interesting too, Rick, and I heard a quote this last week that, you know, if you look at most of the politicians in Congress, not all of them, but most of them have law degrees. And in law school, what did they teach you? They taught you how to win.
Yeah,
right?
The adversarial method. If we two people fight, the right result will result somehow.
And, you know, what we need are I propose what we need in Congress are more people who studied medicine or engineering or other things and that rely on data to make decisions. And if we were doing that, then we'd come up with solutions. But if you have to win, then, you know, we get what we have today, which is a gridlock and idiocy. So,
right. Well, and then it's not about what's true or what works. It's about destroying your enemy. So instead of talking about the policy and what is good or bad about a particular policy, we have all these games that politicians play, smearing each other and name calling and all these irrelevant efforts to destroy personally the careers and public status of their enemies. So that's just all of that. By the way, it's all going to fail of its own inefficiency. That's my view. Is all this illusory, transitory wrangling among politicians over silver and gold and who's got the power and who gets to tell who what to do. All of that is contrary to the laws of nature, and consequently it's illusory. It will not last. It will fail. It will fail as certainly as all the governments in history that have attempted the same thing have failed. And so it's just a matter of time. And those who are in the heat of that battle and the most deluded by it are just, I don't know, in la-la land. They're not dealing with reality. So that's, which is one of the reasons why I guess I have resolved myself to never become involved in politics, because I think getting in that system and buying into the power struggle and the pecking order and the who's on what committee blinds you to the truth. It's what Jesus called the deceitfulness of riches. We think that if we have money and power, that we have money and power, and that we're in control of what's going on, but we're not. So, with all of that said, let's kind of come back to our topic. And I guess I want to say one thing about the kind of people we get to meet as a result of what we do professionally. We get to meet the brightest and the best, people who have started with nothing and created great fortunes, people who have prevailed in spite of tremendous opposition and often have recovered from multiple failures to rise to great financial success. And then finally, at long last, they've ignored the lawyers and the accountants long enough. Finally, they've got to deal with their success and be responsible stewards, and that they come in to meet us. So meeting the caliber and the quality of people that we do is just really a great blessing in this practice. And I having thought about that, I recently come upon this frequently quoted poem by Rudyard Kipling called If. And I want to share that with our listeners. It's a very famous poem. Most of us have heard it before. But I think that this kind of clarifies the kind of courage that we wish our politicians had, that we wish our children had. And it's exemplified by the kind of people that ultimately become our clients. So I'm going to share this poem, If, by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowances for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breed a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count on you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. I just love that poem. I've quoted it many times at scouting events. I think it describes some seed of greatness that lies in all of us, and when we can tap into that greatness,
amazing. Well, there's certainly a lot of wisdom in that. For got to read that in Congress every morning. So, and in Obama's briefing, it would be better off.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, politicians whose power is based upon lying, cheating, and stealing suspect everyone else of lying, cheating, and stealing, and are ruled by fear. And a lot of politicians are in that position. And so such words, while they might exploit them to seek to damage their enemies, they cannot truly implement them. You know, our founding fathers had the notion that to qualify as a leader, you had to have personal virtue. You had to have the ability to tell the truth. You had to have the ability to tell the truth, yeah, and to respect the freedom of others, and including their property. And our current political system is based upon lying, stealing other people's properties, and gaming the system to get power. So on that happy note, I think we need to take a break before we dive into our basics of planning. So let's take a break, and after the break, we'll come back and talk about the basics of planning and what we wish you knew before you came in to see us.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
We spend 70% of our week in the office. What is the difference between enjoying your job and enduring it? The number one motivator is a positive work environment. And that's where Real Recognition Radio comes in. Join your hosts, Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown, as they take a look at the positive factors of the workplace, such as employee rewards, recognition, incentives, and much more. Tune in to Real Recognition Radio, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author, working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy, and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
And if you want to do what some of our listeners do, please feel free to call us at 480-324-8000 anytime. Love to hear from you. We'll set up a time and visit. So have any questions or comments about things we talk about on this show, would love to hear from you. Rick, another quote, and then let's jump into our topic today.
Yeah, one of the things I've in my academic life before becoming a lawyer, I have a completely useless master's degree in religious studies and came to love a lot of religious literature. And one of the finest, most interesting books out there is a little book called The Tao Te Ching by a guy whose name is Lao Tzu, who's credited with being the kind of founder of Chinese Taoism. And very interesting ideas, but some excerpts specifically that I think apply to our current political situation that are kind of interesting. He said, "To lead people, walk beside them. And as for the best leaders, the people do not notice their existence. The next best, the people honor and praise. The next, the people fear. And the next, the people hate. When the best leader's work is done, the people say we did it ourselves. There's a Taoist concept of Wu Wei or inaction, and Lao Tzu is also credited with saying he that governs least governs best. The whole idea that people are smart enough to govern themselves if you just get out of their way. The notion that we're all too stupid to make our own choices and we need government bureaucrats to make them for us because we might make mistakes is a fundamental thinking error. It's a logical error. It's a moral error. It's a spiritual error, and it corrupts and ultimately destroys. And we're seeing that played out, and Lao Tzu got it right. Get out of the people's way. They know what they're doing. So,
and it's also interesting that on some of the news clips I saw this morning is that the CEO at the bank at B of A, they said that he's recently, after several failures, has realized that he just needs to get out of the way and let his people do their job. And so and now they're succeeding. So I think there's a lot of truth there, I think.
There's lots of famous leaders that have said, surround yourself by really smart people and then shut up and let them do their thing. And they say it in various ways. But this is a planning your legal life is one of those areas where you can either implement your own plan or the government and the politicians, they have a plan for you. And the plan that they have for you may have different goals and objectives than the plan you might come up with for yourself. So this is one of those areas where you are permitted in our current American legal system, you are permitted to implement your own plan. But there's a fallback plan for those who just do not step up to the plate and take responsibility. So we want to introduce here for our topic some what I call basic documents that are the very fundamental entry level, the first level of planning that people need to take into consideration. And I want to kind of paint a scenario, tell a story. We all think, especially when we're young, that we're immortal and that however we are today, we're going to be this way forever. And the fact of the matter is that's not so. We're going to change. If we're young, we're going to get old. If we're old, we're going to die. And we're all in this process, this cycle of life and all of its changes. And over time, the brightest and the best and the most capable among us, because of our human nature, our bodies and our minds will decline in their powers, and we will eventually become incapacitated. And usually that occurs to varying degrees and for varying lengths of time before we die, and then we're dead. So two things. We've got to deal with this period of time in which we have declining capacity and our ability to do and to take care of ourselves is diminished. And then we've got to deal with what happens to all the stuff we have accumulated during our competent years when we die. And if we have made no provisions, if we've not made our own planning during the years of our incapacity, the government plan is to prevent people from exploiting us and taking advantage of us and ripping us off when we are unable to defend ourselves as we once were able. Before a person can come in and take the property or make financial decisions or make medical decisions for that matter for a person who has diminished capacity, we have to get a court, a judge, to examine those decisions or to examine the person who's going to make the decisions, and the judge has to approve them. Now, to get a judge to review or approve anything requires a court action, or in other words, litigation. So the default plan of the government, and this is not a bad plan. This is actually a good thing, and it prevents a lot of bad, nasty things from happening. But the default plan is that we're going to have the courts and lawyers contend with each other and come up with and review what's going to happen with your body and your health and your property. And then that court hopefully will make the right decision and decide what's going to happen to you. Now, this process, of course, is expensive. It's intrusive. It's humiliating. And it's contentious. It's adversarial. People will disagree. One child will say, I think we should put mom in a home. And the other child will say, no, mom doesn't want to go to a home. I think we should have mom stay here or whatever. So there's some basic legal planning documents that allows an individual to take control of their life and make some decisions on how things are going to go and create legally enforceable instruments to implement those decisions. And these include these basic documents. And the first one I want to kind of talk about is the durable general power of attorney.
That's a good one, Rick, because I don't think most people have any idea what these durable general powers of attorney are, what they do. So I get the questions about that all the time. So even people that we've sat down and gone through the planning process with. So this will be great for our listeners, I think.
Well, most people don't know what a power of attorney is, and this is based upon something called the law of agency. A person can appoint someone else to be their agent, to be their representative, to be their proxy, to take action on their behalf. And to do that, you grant them these powers, and one of those powers is called the powers of an attorney. So it's not being your lawyer. This is not designated a lawyer, but it's a power of attorney is to designate another person as your attorney in fact, which is a somewhat archaic but fancy way of saying they can act as your agent. They can do what you can do. Now, under the traditional doctrine of agency, your agent can only do what you can do. So your agent can only deal with your property. Your agent can't sell your neighbor's property because you don't own your neighbor's property, so your agent can't deal with that. And likewise, if you do not own something or possess something, you cannot authorize someone else to exercise ownership or possession of that thing. In the same way, if you are incapacitated under a classic traditional power of attorney, your agent is also incapacitated. And there are actually some very famous cases, one of them out of Arizona, where a cowboy designated an agent to act on his behalf, and the agent promptly sold the cowboy's ranch. Well, at the moment that the agent sold the cowboy's ranch, the cowboy was drunk and passed out. Now, a drunk person lacks legal capacity. They cannot enter into a binding contract because they are impaired. And so because at the moment the agent signed the contract, the cowboy was inebriated and unconscious on the floor in the saloon, that the sale of the cowboy's ranch was voided. It was not enforceable. And so that obviously becomes a problem when we deal with the issues of aging, because as we age, our capacity declines. That's the point. So a durable general power of attorney endures. It remains enforceable even though our capacity is diminished. So we can have a durable general power of attorney under which we authorize another person or persons to act on our behalf, to transact business with our property or our possessions or our finances. And that power can persist even though we are incapacitated. Now, capacity is not a cliff that we drive off of. It's generally a hill that we go down slowly. And so a durable power of attorney, if we have executed such a document, We can designate our children, our spouse, trusted friend or advisor. We can designate somebody to make decisions with our property that will be enforceable, even though we are unconscious, we're in a nursing home, where we're no longer able to care for ourselves. So when we have a durable general power of attorney, instead of having to go to court, instead of having to get a judge to say, okay, so-and-so, you are authorized to act on behalf of this person, we have this legal document we've selected in advance. Now, there are all kinds of mechanisms for implementing the durable general power of attorney. There's something called a springing power of attorney, where it doesn't come into effect until we're incapacitated. And the problem with that is, how do we know whether or not we're incapacitated? Often that has to be litigated. So professionally, in my judgment, I do not favor the springing power of attorney. I've just found that those create as many problems as they try to solve. So I compare the durable general power of attorney to a loaded gun. It's when you have executed one, you make it effective now, and you give that person the powers to act with your property, so they can sell your house, sell your car, clean out your bank account, divest your company of its assets. So because it's as like a loaded gun, you don't leave it laying around the house. You only hand it to people you trust, and you only point it at things you're willing to shoot. And critically here, we employ a trigger lock. And the trigger lock I use is generally, as an attorney, I keep physical possession of my client's durable general powers of attorney, and then I have a custodial agreement with the client. I will release them upon certain conditions, like the client is missing for 30 days and nobody can find them, or the client has asked me in writing to, or the client's doctor has said they're incapacitated, or I've done my own due diligence investigation as attorney for the client on their behalf to determine that it's a good time to release the document. So that durable general power of attorney can save huge hassles and aggravation and expenses when a person becomes incapacitated. I guess kind of a war story. Some years ago, some friends of mine, their father and their brother, went to Mexico on a scuba diving trip and simply disappeared. They were just gone. Their campsite, all their camping equipment was there, and they were just gone. They could not be found. And at the time, the family, they had extra cars, they had property, they had all kinds of things that were thrown into turmoil, obviously. But because the wife, the mom in the family, had a durable general power of attorney for her husband, she was able to take over and had legal authority to sell the extra car and to take care of the finances and the bills and things, and huge financial and legal difficulties were avoided because they had prudently, wisely implemented that kind of planning before the horrible events happened. And this happens, frankly, routinely with my aging clients. 10 years ago, my client came in and they were fine and everything was wonderful and great. And today they're not dead, but nobody's home kind of situations. And their family members are able to conduct their affairs without having to go to court and spend a lot of money. Now, this applies not only with financial matters, but it frankly also applies with our body, our medical things as well. So we can have, in addition to durable general powers of attorney, which authorize persons to make decisions with respect to our property and our finances, we can authorize persons to make decisions concerning our body. And there's two documents that are significant. I want to talk first about the durable medical power of attorney. And in recent years, this document has expanded significantly to include not only medical issues dealing with the body, but mental health care issues and so forth. And the bottom line is, a medical power of attorney or a medical directive, and there's lots of other long names for these documents, but A medical power of attorney authorizes other persons to make medical decisions on our behalf if we're unable to communicate our own wishes. Now, if we can say, don't cut that off, I want that, or I refuse to take that medicine, or please give me that medicine, then if we're able to communicate, then we don't need the durable medical power of attorney. But again, incapacity is a situation that all of us will face, even if it's the last few seconds before we breathe our last breath. We all face this, and it's better for us to designate in advance those persons that we want to make the medical decisions on our behalf rather than having to force our family to go to court. The medical power of attorney kind of overlaps a little bit with the living will, which we will talk about in some detail when we come back from our next break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Social media is growing at an astounding rate. In just virtually 5 short years, we have seen YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter take the world by storm. How do you effectively make social media work for you? Tune in to The Social Universe with host Kurt Wilhelm. We'll show you how to market your business or yourself to get ahead, especially in unstable economic times. We'll also discuss practices that you can apply to increase visibility and revenue as you unlock the mysteries of the social universe. The Social Universe is broadcast live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everyone. During that last segment, we figured out on the break that my microphone was switched off, and so I kept trying to say things, and I just thought Rick was ignoring me. But
yeah, I was being rude and talking over you. That's
as it turns out, he couldn't hear me. So anyway, you can tell we're not exactly expert radio personalities yet. So anyway, in this segment, we're talking about basic documents, the next one we wanted to talk about was the living will, and so sometimes referred to as the pull the plug document. And Terry Schiavo's name somehow pops up in this discussion, but a very important document. And if you lived through, you know, the whole situation with Terry Schiavo and the big mess that surrounded that, you kind of know. And really, Rick, all of our clients, at least all of the clients that I've ever worked with, they want, you know, they want the language in that to say, look, if I'm a vegetable and I'm just not there, then let me go. And so I think, you know, 90-something% of people really feel that way. I'm sure you've run into others who don't feel that way, but that's an important document, because otherwise you could be in this, again, in this whole legal situation where the where they just have to keep you alive, and you know, maybe there's selfish reasons that people are doing that, and so Anyway, as the attorney, you know, you should probably jump in and.
Yeah, you know, there's living wills are, interestingly enough, a fairly modern document. I've lived long enough that this has happened in my lifetime, in my professional practice, that living wills came from nothing to now we have them and they're fairly common and they're recognized by statute. And they arose for a couple of reasons. It used to be, well, duh, of course a person, if they have a terminal illness or if they're in advanced stages of age and they're about to die, let them go home and have a peaceful death. And death at home, you know, with family members was normal and ordinary, and that began to change on lots of levels. We began to institutionalize death. It was something that didn't happen at home. It happened in a hospital. And we began to have greater powers to prolong or prevent death. And medical doctors began to have the attitude that, hey, I can keep this person alive. And sometimes the person didn't want to stay alive. And the medical profession, which, you know, to their credit, wants to save people, wanted to save them. And then we had situations where the lawyers said, well, if you don't save them, you're going to get sued and you're going to be liable for letting them die. And so lawyers and the doctors kind of in this kabuki dance of you know, collusive dysfunction started keeping people alive who didn't want to be kept alive. And the whole idea that, wait a sec, I don't want you to keep me alive, let me die, was somehow a new idea when it was really an old idea. And in my own family, I have a very there was a situation where a relative of mine had a degenerative disease where she lost the use of her body over time and had descended to the point where she was in what's called a locked-in condition. Her ability to communicate went down and down and down until she could only blink. She could blink once for yes and twice for no. She had no other use of her body. And she was in a research hospital. A physician was making rounds with the young interns, and they happened to be standing next to her bed. This was in the late 50s, early 60s. Happened to be standing next to her bed when she stopped breathing, and the physician said, "Oh, what a marvelous opportunity to demonstrate the new technology of our new iron lung." And they performed an emergency tracheotomy on her, hooked her up to an iron lung, and kept her alive for several months in this locked-in vegetative state where her body was alive, but that's it. And, of course, they passed the bill for all of this expensive procedure onto her husband. And so in addition to being you know, devastating emotionally and spiritually and a horrible, traumatic thing for the family, it was ridiculously expensive. And it's to prevent that sort of nonsense that the living will came to be an issue. And the living will is basically exercising one of those inalienable rights that we all have. They're not given to us by the government. We have them independent of the government, but the right to accept or decline medical treatment. We have the right to say, yes, I want you to do this medical procedure, or no, I don't want you to do this medical procedure. And a living will exercises that right to the extreme degree of saying, if I'm brain dead, if these conditions exist in my life, let me die. Do not intervene to prolong the inevitable. Do not use heroic measures to keep me alive. Let me go. If God's calling, don't argue. let him have me. And for some reason, when this first came out, those lawyers and doctors, again, that there are those that were nobly inclined, but there are those also that have the attitude that, hey, if you want to die, you must be stupid. You must be impaired. This must be a manifestation of your incapacity, and we're not going to let you make that decision. We're going to make the decision for you. And so this is one of those personal liberty issues, in my opinion, that there are people out there eager to take this decision away from you. And you know, then there's the bad side of this, I guess. There's the eugenics of people who say, no, there are some people that we want to kill. Let us kill them, which is we see happening in Europe right now. It has happened over and over again throughout history. But the living will is an exercise of your personal power to accept or decline medical treatment, even if it results in your death. And I have been through this situation hundreds of times with clients, and it is a great blessing. And it's a document that any responsible person who wants to have their end of life go peacefully and smoothly without financial trauma and emotional and legal trauma over who gets to make the decision is going to implement a living will. Now, I want to comment here that both a living will and a medical power of attorney can be frustrated. They can be overridden in one very significant situation, and that is in an attempted suicide. I just have to say I do not agree with suicide. I think it is morally and spiritually wrong, but as a practical matter, don't try it. This is not something to attempt and fail at. If you're going to do it all the way, succeed. If you attempt suicide and fail, they will not honor your living will or your medical power of attorney. They will keep you alive against your will. I had a client some years ago who attempted suicide. She took several bottles of very strong medication and woke up in the hospital with tubes down her throat. And she was furious, very, very determined woman. The nurses walked out of the room, and she, if you know what it is to be intubated, she took a hold of those tubes and ripped them out of her body with her hands. She actually did that twice, and they had to Velcro her arms to the table. And they kept her alive. She ended up living for about another 3 weeks. And during that 3 weeks, I had multiple conversations with her, and she was mad at me. She said, Rick, you're my lawyer. You prepared this living will for me. I want to die. They are keeping me alive and are forcing these medications and these procedures on me when I don't want them. And I want you as my lawyer to stop them from doing it and let me die. And that was a very unpleasant situation. So I'm just going to tell you, there is no try. There is only do or do not, particularly, to quote Yoda, particularly in the area of suicide. Do not make a half-hearted attempt at that. If you're going to do it all the way. But preferably, don't do it. Life is worth living, even if it feels horrible at the moment.
Right.
So.
We've got about 5 minutes till we're finished today, Rick. The only other one thing comment I wanted to make on living wills is that you had mentioned to me that those get out of date fairly quickly. For example, some changes in the HIPAA law 6 or 7 months ago caused us to have to look at all of those again. So these are documents that during your life and when you do have capacity need to be looked at regularly. Annually is what we try to do with our clients so that those kinds of things can be taken care of and we don't get out of date so that there are problems when there shouldn't be problems. The last thing we should talk about is the basic will. I know that in much of our planning, Rick, we do what's called a pour-over will simply because a trust, a properly constructed and funded living trust, takes away the need for a lot of the things that are typically put in a will. And so in a pour-over will, we basically put in language that says, if I forgot to put anything in my trust, then I'm directing you to put it in the trust and let those provisions take care of things. There are a couple of exceptions to that, and that is if you have minor children, it's important to have a will, and that's because I believe, Rick, without the will and designating guardians for minor children, that could end up in court. So,
right.
a other comments on that before we go to close?
Well, the will is super critical for designating who gets the minor children, and there's a reason why we put it in a will. Ordinarily, statements that we make while living are not admissible into evidence once we're dead. And there are some exceptions to that. And the reason for that is something called the hearsay rule, if we're not there to validate that they were actually said. But there are a number of exceptions to that. And a will is a expressly permitted exception to that. We're going to allow the will into evidence because there are special provisions that protect it from being done fraudulently. And so we want to have certain wishes expressed in the will, including who do we want to get possession of our minor children in the event that we're dead and unable to raise them ourselves. So I think in our final few minutes here, I want to stress to our listeners that if you do not have these basic legal and medical emergency documents, go get them now. Even if you do bad ones are better than not having any at all. Go get a kit. If you have to, download some from offline. Online, you know, it would be best if you went and did it with a lawyer, but again, doing bad or poor ones is better than not having them at all. If you do have them, they do need to be freshened up. Roughly every 5 or 6 years or so, they should be reviewed and updated by a competent advisor who's able to help you with that. And these are so critical. Everyone over the age of 18, even if you have no assets, even if you have no children, you have a body. You have health issues. You're going to have a little bit of pocket change. You need all these documents. So the time is now. Act, get it done. Don't wait. Don't put it off. Come on in and see us, or go online and get a kit, or call someone. So that's it for today. We've enjoyed visiting with you, and we would be happy to visit with any of you again. Give us an email, info@whataboutwealth.com, or call 480-324-8000. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.